Thank you so much for joining us for Spirit, the stimulating program initiative for retirees that inspires thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Senior Director of the OU's Department of Community Projects and Partnerships and Coordinator and Host for Spirit. The OU started Spirit several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it as an online program for retirees, not yet retirees, baby boomers, empty nesters, sandwich generation parents, and seniors, everyone who's looking for educational, intellectual, and spiritual growth. Since the beginning of the pandemic so many years ago, Spirit continues to be the safe and ideal way for everyone to connect and learn together in a virtual setting. Today's program is commemorated in memory of Moshe Ben Dov Baer, Zichrono Livracha, Melvin Steinig, and Shana Miral Bas Arod, Zichrono Livracha, Miral Steinig. May their neshamas have an aliyah. Today's program is one that I have been looking forward to presenting for such a long time. And I am so happy to have Miriam Hendelis, who's a music therapist, to speak with us today on how music can be help us in healing. And so without further ado, I'm going to introduce Miriam Hendelis, who's a music therapist. And I think everyone is going to really appreciate this program, which is so important today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, I'm Miriam. Hi, everyone. Thank you, Rebbitz and Judy, for that introduction. So before I begin, I'm Miriam Hendelis. I'm a music therapist. I've been a music therapist since 1995. I studied music therapy at Cal State Northridge and then did a 1,200-hour internship in Long Beach, California with adults with special needs and developmental disabilities. And that's how I got my credential music therapy board certified after taking an exam. So there's a lot of different requirements to becoming a music therapist, but I'm not going to talk about that here. I'm just going to say, before I begin, I'd like to thank a shout out to my very good friend, Rebbitzin Fegi Horowitz, who might be in the audience. I'm not sure she is or she isn't, but I just want to give Hakaras HaTov to her because Fegi introduced me and connected me with Rebbitzin Judy many months ago, and we played phone tag. Rebbitzin Judy and I played phone tag back and forth, email tag actually, and we finally connected and we set up this time, and it's my honor to do this and to speak for Spirit. And also I wanted to mention that Fegi Horowitz has an organization that she and Miriam Lieberman, another dear friend of mine, co-founded several years ago, which has a lot in common with Spirit. It's called JWOW, Jewish Women of Wisdom, and they have a website, jewishwomenofwisdom.org. And I can tell you all about it here, but there's not a lot of time. But there are similarities to Spirit and there are differences. And it's an online resource and it's amazing. And go check it out. Become a member. JWOW, jewishwomenofwisdom.org. Also for midlife women, but only women, not men. And it's for women 50 plus, not 60 plus. So there's a little differences there, but there are others also. Anyway, back to me, back to music therapy. What is music therapy? Okay. Music therapy is, in a short version and the short definition, because when we were in school, we had to always practice our elevator pitch. If someone's going to ask us, what's music therapy? Is it playing Beethoven in your car? Is it you know, relaxing with music, heart music? No, that's not music therapy. Music therapy is, Judy, could you put the slide up? Oh, is it up? Oh, okay, thank you. Okay, music therapy, that's the official definition, the AMTA, American Music Therapy Association, and the website of that is musictherapy.org. That's the fancy definition. But the definition that I use is using music for non-music goals. I love it. And some of the goals that we address, I'll talk about later, but some of them would be relaxation, stress, relief from agitation, language skills for children, helping with mobility for people with stroke victims and so forth. Music is the medium that we use. So you have the therapist and you have the music. Just like in psychotherapy, you have the therapist and you have the talking and you have the conversation and you have the relationship. So in music therapy, you have the therapist and you have the personality of the therapist, and you have the relationship between the therapist and the client, and then you have the music, which is the medium between the two of them, and that helps them connect to the and reach the goals of the patient or client. So it's a prescribed method. It's not something someone does on themselves, just like any therapy is not. It's something that is clinically based, and it's scientifically proven that it works. And we'll talk about that later. But basically, I did want to mention here that music is so powerful. We all know that. Shaul HaMelech asked David HaMelech to play his harp for him to help relieve his depression. Well, the Leviim played music in the Beis HaMikdash. We have a mother in her womb, her breathing is rhythmic, and that soothes the baby. We have babies with lullabies, we play lullabies to soothe them. We all know that music helps. Nobody needs us to tell us that. But music therapy is a medically based field that started in, well, actually it started, like I said, back in, you know, from beginning of time, you know, but as a profession in America, it started in 1950. Actually, in 1944, they started a program in the Michigan State University, opened a program there for music therapy, to for people to become music therapists, get a degree in music, get a degree in music therapy, study all the psychology, all the anatomy, all the physiology, whatever they need to study to become a music therapist, have the practicums at Michigan State University and get their credential that way. The reason they did that in 1944 was because in the early 1940s, they saw a lot of people from the war, also World War I back in the, you know, early 20th century, but in 1940s, World War II, the veterans were coming back from the war, and they were depressed, and they were shell-shocked, and they were in hospitals, and they noticed that people would come play music for them, and it would help them come out of their depression. And a lot of the doctors in these hospitals said, you know, there's something about music, let's do something. And that's why they started that program. And then in 1950, the Music Therapy Association was founded as an official music therapy, you know, to regulate the field. And that was in 1950. So that's 70 years ago. We've had a Music Therapy Association recently, and maybe about 20 years ago, they changed the name to AMTA. So that's, you know, that's that. Anyway, so I wanted to say one more thing before we go into the next slide. I wanted to say why I became a music therapist. The reason I became a music therapist is because when I was my late 20s, my husband and I, we had two boys, and then we had a baby girl, and she was born with a heart problem, and she died after 3 months, and my husband and I were devastated. And the only thing that helped me, the main thing that helped me, I was anxious. I wouldn't say I was depressed, but I was anxious, and I had, you know, I really was having a hard time. My husband also, it was music. I went back to school to study music, but to study it formally, because I had taken piano lessons as a child, but this was my way of getting the structure of it. And I started realizing music has structure. Music has predictability. Music has safety. Music is non-threatening. And all those properties of music are what make music helpful. And they were helping me. They were helping me heal from the loss of my baby. So what did I do? I continued on with my theory and harmony and all those things that you need to take in order to become a musician, a proper musician, not just one playing piano, which is wonderful, but this was for the schooling purposes. And I ended up becoming a music therapist in the 1990s. By 1995, I was starting to, 1996, I was starting to practice. So, and I remembered that my own piano teacher back when I was a child, when I was 8, 9, 10, she was a music therapist in her day job, and she told me about music therapy. I didn't even know there was such a thing as music therapy until she told me. I was like 10 years old, and I asked her what it's all about. She worked with children who had autism in a facility called Willow Brook in Staten Island, and she was a PhD in psychology, and she was a music therapist, and this was like in the 70s, and she was a music therapist, and that's what also motivated me, because my piano teacher did it, and I loved her, and now I was healing, and it was healing me, so I wanted to share that with you, that story. If you can go on to the next slide, please. Thank you. Okay. So who may benefit from, interesting music therapy articles. Thank you. Interesting music therapy articles. Now, obviously I'm not going to be able to tell you so much here because there's so much to know and many things you know already. And it's probably better if you just, you know, catch up with these articles. One of them is from this month's issue of the AARP magazine. It's fabulous article. One of them is the musictherapy.org, the association's website. You can check there and see music therapists in your area. You can find them. You can, you know, seek them out. You can read all about music therapy, what it takes to become a music therapist, and what music and all that. So, and then the other articles. Okay, so that'll help you whatever fill in the blanks, what I don't discuss and everything else. Okay, thank you. And you can go on to the next slide, please. Thank you. Okay, so who benefits from music therapy? So I work with elderly in hospice. I have, since I became a music therapist, as I said, in 1995, 1996 is when I got my board certification. Since then, at the beginning, I was working with children with autism, children on the spectrum, children with Down syndrome. As I said, my internship was with adults with developmental disabilities, but I went back to children. That was my specialty. And I was doing privately, and I was doing through an agency. And I found that music helps, and you'll see it here, it's autistic spectrum disorder, ASD. And that's one of the fields, that one of the areas that music therapy helps. So there's others, acquired brain injury, I don't have to read it all, mental health, hospice care. Hospice care I also work with right now at, like in the mid 2005, 2006, I switched over to hospice. And since then I work with elderly in hospice. There's an agency near my house. They refer patients to me. I also have a few private clients. And I help. I go into the people's homes, into their board and care facilities, wherever the patient is. It's a private session. Sometimes I do group sessions, but mostly I do private one-on-one. And I'll play music for them, and I'll create an activity for them so that they reach their goals. We're an interdisciplinary group at the hospice, and there's doctors, nurses, home health aides, me, a couple of chaplains, you know, spiritual counselors. And we have meetings once a week, and we discuss all the patients, and we go around the table, and everybody says how the patients are doing. And then we're all on the same page as far as goals. So some of the goals that I address in hospice would be, as I said, it's said in this, I think the next slide, I think, is goals, but we'll talk about that in a few minutes, is relaxation, agitation, anticipatory grief, pain. Music helps with pain. Music helps with life review. Reminiscence is a very big thing. That's a goal, that to achieve reminiscence. That's actually an objective towards the goal. So when the patient reminisces, and people with Alzheimer's, they've done studies that people with Alzheimer's are really, really resistant to so many therapies. But when it comes to music therapy, they are so responsive to it. And they've done actual, you know, scientific studies on that. And the same thing with, as I said before, with autism. Many of them are resistant to so many therapies. Obviously, speech therapy, social skills therapy, those are all wonderful. Occupational, physical, all those therapies. But something about music is so special to these patients that it just takes them to another place. Okay, now you can move to the next slide, please. Okay, that's right. So here's the goals. So promote wellness, manage stress, pain, feelings, memory, communication, physical rehabilitation. The ones that I work on mostly, I would say, would be the communication and stress. And pain and memory. The others doesn't come up as much with my clients. So if I would be working with high functioning clients who are, you know, an average person, let's say I went for physical therapy, I would want to express my feelings about what's going on in the world right now. And I would have a music therapist help me with that. And that would be my goal. But enhanced memory is more of a goal that I have with the Alzheimer's patients. Obviously, they've already lost many neurons, but there's studies to show that when you sing a song with them, when you go in there and you do a group session or even a one-on-one and you start singing songs that they learned when they were children, that they sang when they were teenagers, usually it's the age from like 18 to 25, approximately that age range, they remember those songs like as if it was yesterday. And they start singing along with you, and they start joining in with you, and they start remembering the words. And then you can even quiz them on everything to do with that song or everything to do with other songs that were played around that time. Suddenly it's like ding, ding, ding. The neurons, they've done studies, they've shown MRIs are accessed, that light up the different sides of the brain. So you have the right side of the brain, which is emotion. You have the left side of the brain, which is language. And then so both sides of the brain, when you play with music, are affected. It's amazing. It's almost like music is structured. So it's very, you know, rigid, and it has rules, and it has a beginning and a middle and an end. And you have like a song, you'll have the beginning of the song, you'll have the middle of the song, and the end of the song. You know you're going to have those three parts. You know you're going to come back to the refrain. You know that it's going to be that, and that's the predictability. That's the structure that we have with children. But with elderly, as I just was saying, you have the neurons being, you know, fired. And we all know that when the neurons are fired, they're wired. More wires come connected together. And I don't want to make any claims here, but I did read studies where they have shown that it could bring out old memories and old conversations and old reminiscences. And what's the point of reminiscence? I know we all do reminiscence. We like to remember the past. We like to have nostalgia, and we like to discuss when we were children. But what's the point of it? It's not necessarily to bring us back to that and say, oh, we're living in the past. No, it's a socialization tool. These people, they are living in the past, but you want to bring them to the present. So when they're having that session with you, they are engaging in something together with you that's appropriate and that's social and that's right and that's correct. And that's, I shouldn't say correct. There's no wrong or right in music therapy, and there's no wrong or right, and we don't judge. But my point is that it's a socially appropriate setting where, and the families love it, and the families appreciate that they gain these goals in their end of life. Now, the families are not in denial. So I remember the first time I went for a hospice meeting back, the IDG meetings that I told you about, the first time I went for one of those meetings, like, I don't know, 15 years ago, I sat at the meeting and everybody was laughing and joking. It's not a Jewish company, but I do see a lot of Jewish patients. I see a lot of religious patients. I see, and I see a lot of non-Jewish patients, all different ethnicities all over the city of Los Angeles where I live. And I noticed that it was very jovial, and it bothered me the first time. I was like, why are they laughing? These people are dying. And then I realized the truth. It is not a depressing field. It is not a depressing population, hospice. It's hard. It's something you have to get used to, but it's not depressing. Why is it not depressing? Because death is part of life. Death is something that eventually happens. And as when these families know that their family is being, that their loved one is being taken care of by having a doctor and a nurse coming to the house, and having that the death is not a surprise and it is not a shock. Obviously, they have to go through and they have to have the counseling. That's not my job. That's the social worker's job. But I do the music, and not every patient is responsive to music. That is something I want to say. It makes it sound like I'm saying that music is perfect. Music is everything. Music is wonderful, and music solves all problems. No, we once had a professor come from Temple University in Philadelphia to speak to us when I was in college. And he's, I don't remember his name, but Temple University has a huge music therapy program. And he came and he spoke to us as a guest. And he said, it's dangerous when you say that music is for everybody. It's not for everybody. Be careful. You know, as they say, do no harm, you know, like with doctors. Be careful. Do not say that it's for everyone, because it's not. And that's why out of a census in our hospice, we have a census of, like, let's say, you know, 100 patients. I see 20, you know, 15, 20. So I'll see, let's say, 8 one week and 8 or 9 the next week. And some of them I'll double up. Right now I'm a little lower because I was out. I had foot issues, you know, ankle issues. So I was out for a while. So I'm building up my caseload again. And I do have some private ones. But it's not for everyone. And the family has to appreciate. And sometimes I go in there and I go there like 2-3 times. And then they call me up. They say, you know what? There's no time for it. They have too many people coming in, too many other you know, doctors, and it's too overwhelming. And I say, fine, I step back. Patients decline music therapy. Patients love it, and patients decline it. It's not for everyone. And that's an important thing to learn. We don't get all depressed. Oh, they rejected me. It's not like that. It's more that it's not about me. It's about the music, and it's about what they can gain from it. Okay, so next slide. What is the next slide? I don't even know. Music therapy process. Okay, this is important. There's a process of music therapy. Obviously, it starts with the referral. So you have, in my hospice organization, usually I get referred by the social worker or the spiritual counselor, once in a while by the nurse, but mostly by the social worker or the spiritual counselor, because they're the counselors. It's just, you know, I'm considered one of the counselors. They're the counselors. The other ones are more medical. And they'll refer me and they'll say, this patient is anxious, or this patient is agitated, or this patient is, you know, the family's having a problem, whatever they'll tell me. And they'll write up a few notes for me, and then I'll check the face sheet, which we call the face sheet, which is all the facts about the patient on the computer, because we all have our own computer with about all the patients. And then I'll call up the family, I'll call up the son, or whoever the one in charge, the contact person, and I'll set up a time, I'll introduce them. I'll sometimes have to give a little education about what music therapy is, because a lot of people don't know. And they're very curious about it, like, what's, I know so-and-so told me that you're gonna call, you know, and then we set up a time to go, and I go and I do an assessment. And it's just like any therapy. I do an assessment, and then I plan a treatment plan. And then sometimes I need a few times to do an assessment, because I can't figure it out right away. Sometimes I change my mind about things, but it's all very fluid. And then the treatment, sometimes it's just me playing for the patient. If they're sleeping, I just play for them, and I provide the relaxation, and I watch the face to see how they're responding. I see if they are responding, if they're not responding, if they need, I need to terminate it, if it's not working. If it is working, I'll continue. And there's a lot of feedback, and there's a lot of communication. As my boss at the hospice organization says, over-communicate. She's very into over-communicating, because a lot of these families, they get very sensitive if you're not in touch with them, and you don't, and they're right about it, and they it's all rightfully so. And then there's evaluation. Evaluation with hospice is different than evaluation, let's say, with special needs, or different than evaluation with regular typical kids, or different than evaluation with adults with, you know, emotional challenges. Evaluation is more, you see the decline of the patient as they're sadly, you know, losing weight, and they're dying, and they're being kept comfortable. That's I'm not going to get into that, but that's the whole philosophy of hospice, that they're kept comfortable, and they're not in the hospital. Sometimes they go back to the hospital, but sometimes they stay home. And that's the evaluation. But at the same time that they're having the decline in their physical, they're showing benefits. It's called benefits, not progress. They're showing benefits. And we document that, and we have to document that. And every 3 months, we get evaluated by JCO, which is the Joint Commission of Hospice, and we have to show that they're continuing to decline on the one hand and benefit on the other hand, and then they get funded for the next 3 months. If they are shown that they are not appropriate for hospice, or appropriate for music therapy, or appropriate for whatever, then it's called extended diagnosis, extended prognosis, and then they're terminated, and then they go back home, and then they're not on hospice anymore. But that's just some of the details of how hospice works. I did want to say that there are, and as you have in any therapy, you have the different domains. You have the cognitive, emotional, social, spiritual, physical, communication. So when I'll write a report about the patient, and I used to do this more with the special needs, with the children with developmental disabilities, I used to write long reports. With hospice, it's just short little documentation in the charts. They don't want long stories. And so, but as far as with children's skills, I used to do attention, socio-emotional, language, and motor. That was what really worked with me. And my person who was supervising me when I worked in special needs. So that's basically that. Those are the categories for assessment, you know, so you document and you assess through those categories. And then finally, the final slide, I think, is how I like to say, and I've seen this written up, that there's active music therapy and there's receptive music therapy. Now, let me show you some of the instruments that I have. I have here, I have a rain stick, which I use for relaxation. There's a little girl in my neighborhood who has severe developmental disabilities. She's 5 years old, and I work with her now privately, because I have a few of those, not many, very few, and besides the hospice. And she tends to take instruments and throw them. And so one of the goals that we're having is holding on to instruments and playing appropriately and not throwing. And it's measurable goals. I document them, like how many seconds she held on to it. And then we turn it around. She cannot turn it around, because that's a motion that's really, really a hard motion for many children, occupational therapy wise. But the noise she really likes, the soothing sounds of the rain stick, she really likes. Another thing that she likes is the ocean drum. And I have a big ocean drum. Where is it? Over here. This is, I use these for children with developmental disabilities. I do not use instruments with the elderly. They don't, I tried it once with groups and they really don't like it. They don't, they just want to listen. They just want to sing. They just want to talk. They just want to reminisce. So I find that I don't use instruments with them. Sometimes I'll give them a little shaker, but they don't really like it. It's, to them, it feels childish, and you cannot do things that are beneath them dignity-wise with the elderly, with anybody, even with children. You have to do something that's age appropriate. So back to that little girl that I'm working with, she likes this because she'll hold one side of it and I hold the other side of it, and it has the, you know, pictures of the ocean, and she'll bang it against me and I'll resist. And so she's strengthening her arms and she's making appropriate music, and we're having this conversation together. You, me, you, me, you, me. And she's back and forth, and then she starts to smile, this beautiful smile. She's 5 years old and she doesn't have any verbal skills. She has no language and she doesn't stand. But she's such a beautiful child, and it's just such a pleasure to work with her. I also have something else that I use, and this is all active music therapy. When we're making music, using instruments, objects, voices, composing, or an other activity with the client, and with, that's active music therapy, as opposed to receptive music therapy, where the patient is just sitting and receiving the music therapy. You can be playing a song. I could be playing my harp. I actually have a harp. It's my main instrument is piano, but I could play something on the harp, or I'll play something on YouTube, or I'll just sing a cappella without any music in the background. They'll listen, and they'll be sleeping, or maybe they're up and they're smiling. That's more receptive music therapy. One more thing about active music therapy that I wanted to say is sometimes you have a xylophone, it's this, and you have what's called a pentatonic scale. You'll see five notes. And so here's what it sounds like. So what I wanted to say about that pentatonic is, you know, in a piano, you have the black keys and you have the white keys. So the black keys are separated in such a way that if you play only the black keys, you can't go wrong. You can only make a song, no matter how you arrange those black, five black keys, pentatonic, those five black keys, C sharp, D sharp, F sharp, G sharp, A sharp, no matter how you arrange them and mix it up, it's gonna be pretty. It's gonna sound good. So that's why this xylophone was created as a pentatonic scale. It's so when children play it, when you have taking turns and I play something and they play something, we have imitation and we have improvisation, and nobody's doing anything wrong. It's all correct. It's all beautiful. It's all music. And that's the beauty of it. So I'll play with a child, or I'll play even with an, sometimes I'll bring it into my private clients, but like I said, they're not interested too much, and they're weak and it's end of life. And so so that's another instrument that I use. I also have drumming. I'll have, you know, I'll play a drum, and you know, there's somebody in Muncie, he's a percussionist, and he does everything with drums. He uses piano too and probably guitar, but I'll use drums with the children that I work with. And yeah, so that's about it. So thank you very much. I'm going to now do an activity that I'd like to do with you to show you what a music therapy activity can be like, one type of music therapy activity. So we could have a situation where you play a song for the patient, for the client, and this is for somebody who's cognitively, advanced, whether it's somebody who's depressed, whether it's somebody who's anxious, whether it's just anybody, and they want to participate in a music therapy session and gain skill goals and achieve goals such as relaxation, understanding, more clarity about what's going on, more, I can't think of the words right now, but there are words, you know, just processing, processing the situation, basically processing the situation. So what we do is we do something called lyric analysis. And sometimes we do composition, and sometimes we change words around. That's a whole separate thing, but we do lyric analysis. And so I'm going to play a song called, many of you know it, it's by A.B. Rottenberg from Journeys 4, and it's called Mama Rachel. And I'm gonna play it on my keyboard here, and I have it on the loudest possible. So hopefully, and I'm also gonna use my sustain pedal, and you could follow along. and you could sing to yourself. Obviously, you're all muted, and you could follow along. And after, while I'm playing it and while you're reading the words, I want you to pay attention to any phrases that jog out at you, that come out at you in your you know, to your eyes, to your thoughts, to your emotions, and think of a positive word, one word, like a feeling that it evokes. So what words do these words evoke? And it could be one line that evokes it. It could be the line of the refrain. What feeling, and it could be a positive feeling or it could be a negative feeling, whatever it is, and put it down in the chat. And then after the session's over, you can take an instrument that you brought along, if you brought along an instrument, or if you didn't, if you find an instrument, or you can just use your table and just play that feeling. So like if I'm playing sadness, that would be my way of playing sadness. Or happiness, I would play on the xylophone, or, you know, fear or hope or whatever feeling you want. Just put it down in the chat. Judy's going to open the chat for everyone. And then that's really the activity right now. So I'm going to play the song right now. Mama Rachel by A.B. Rottenberg, and it starts with an introduction, and I'm not going to sing, so just read along the words, the lyrics. And then there's the different refrains. And so I don't see the chat, but I imagine it's... Judy, do you want to read something?
Everybody can put comments into the chat. I don't see anything in front of me right now.
Okay.
If anybody has a comment or even a question,
okay. Someone said, am I the only one who never heard of this song? No, you're probably not the only one who never heard of this song, Leonard, I won't say your last name. it's very possible many songs I have never heard of, and some of my clients request songs, and somebody said sadness, and I'm like, I don't know that song, but I could go home and learn it. I tell that to a lot of patients who request specific songs, like, you know, jazz songs that I'm not familiar with or whatever, because there's all different types of songs out there, as we know. I'm going to look at
the Can I stop the share now?
Yes, stop the share. Okay, thank you. Okay, so now we have the chat, and I see there's five people who wrote in the chat. That's good. If you can read them aloud, Judy.
Actually, I'm not seeing yours.
Prayer and hope. I see prayer and hope. I saw sadness. Somebody, Heather, says prayer and hope. Janet says this song always makes me very emotional. Miriam says very moving, thinking of the words, and I feel very hopeful for the future. Great. Yeah. Thank you. That's Miriam L., Miriam Lieberman, my friend who I alluded to before. Leonard said, as I said, am I the only one who never heard of this song? Someone else said, S. Moss said, regarding the melody, not the words. I love that. Nostalgia. I love that. I love that he took the words. Yes, it was maybe a woman, maybe a man, I don't know. I love that that person took the word, the melody, and said the melody itself makes them feel nostalgic. And that's really amazing, because sometimes you'll have songs without words, obviously many times, and there's so much to be gained by just wordless songs, obviously. So that's what we have here. Yeah, prayer and hope. So thank you so much, everybody. Does anybody else want to write? There haven't been any others here, but that's okay. There's no, you know, it's all voluntary to write something, to type something in. And now I'd like to open it up for Q&A. But before I do that, I'd like to say that at the very end, I'm going to be playing a song as a closing, a soothing song, and I'm playing it on the YouTube. So it's not going to be in the archives, because I've been told that everything on the tape, when it comes to YouTube, they flag it and you won't be able to hear it. But you'll hear it at the session if you want to stay after the Q&A to hear this song and to just kind of take a deep breath. And in and out, that's what I did before I did the session. I took a walk around my block, you know, and I just kind of breathed in for a few seconds and out for a few seconds, in and out. And that's music therapy. And sometimes I do that with a guided imagery. I play harp music in the background from YouTube, and I think of a beautiful scenery, you know, on the beach, or, and, you know, that kind of like takes me through the guides me through the imagery in my mind. I'm imagining a beautiful scene, and that relaxes me with the music in the background. So it's the words and the music together. Anyway, so Q&A, anybody have any questions? Put them into the chat if you have questions. Again, everybody's muted, so we're not opening up to questions. But if you have questions, put them into the chat and make it that it's not, it's all direct message. Send it to me, and I'm staring at the chat. So if you write something, I'm going to see it. If nobody has any questions, that's fine too. But I'll play some music in the background in the meantime. I'm going to play actually that song that I said I was going to play. I'm going to play it very, very softly. And because I see there are no questions, which is wonderful. And I'm going to turn this on here. It's Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. And we have only 5 more minutes, so that's good. And that is the song that I'm going to be playing that we will end off with. And just listen to it. And As I wrote in the chat, if you could, if you have any questions, email me, miriamhendelis@gmail.com. You can also check out my blog website /blog, miriam-hendelis.com. And yeah, so it's been a pleasure talking to you all and sharing with you about music therapy. And thank you so much for coming. And may we all see peace in this world, and may we all have joy and happiness, all different types of music to bring that about, and human beings who sing the music, who play the music, and enjoy the music is what we need.
Miriam, thank you so much for such a beautiful presentation. I think everybody gained a lot from it, particularly in our times now, which are that so stressful and so difficult. I think you really gave us a lot. We really appreciate it. By the way, I just will be sending Miriam's PowerPoint out that had all those many links that can be very valuable. That will go out with the recording, plus all the information that she just put in the chat. If you didn't get it from the chat, don't worry about it. You will get it with the recording. So that will be coming either hopefully later today or tomorrow. So we thank everyone for joining us. Two announcements. Next week on December 26th, we'll be having a presentation on how to complete a halachic living will. Such an important session, very much timed with the Parsha of the week. So that will be next week with Rabbi Dr. Shlomo Brody of Imatai, which is an organization dedicated to helping Jews navigate their healthcare journey. So that will be next week. And lastly, as we end up the secular year, many people are anticipating giving donations, which is so important. And I want to encourage you, when you are donating, to think of the Spirit Program, which everybody has gotten so many programs at no cost over the past almost 4 years. But we want to continue the program. We look to grow the program further, and we really need your help. So I want to encourage you to please donate to Spirit. There should be a link in all of the emails that you receive. Certainly there's one on the website. So thank you so much. Miriam, thank you so much for such a wonderful presentation. And we thank everybody for joining us today. Take care. Have a great week.